This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Quality News Network. Lawmakers in Germany have overwhelmingly approved extending the deployment of 3,000 troops in Afghanistan for another year, going against the majority of public opinion. The government pushed for the renewal, saying a pullout could endanger the progress made there. Former Vice President Al Gore has won the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize, along with the UN's Panel on Climate Change. Gore and the panel are being recognized for their efforts to spread awareness of global warming. He said that he would donate his share of the prize money to further that cause. The White House praised him for winning the prize. A White House spokesman said President Bush is, quote, very happy for the vice president, end quote. Yesterday, the British government issued strict guidelines when Gore's film An Inconvenient Truth is shown in classrooms. The guidelines must reveal 9 scientific errors that have been refuted by scientists. New Zealand has written the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences in an appeal to strip Mr. Gore of his Oscar for the film. In Moscow today, high-level talks about the U.S. missile defense plans for Eastern Europe did not reach a resolution other than an agreement to meet again. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates took part, along with Russian President Vladimir Putin, who warned the U.S. to back off. The Prime Minister of Myanmar has died after a long illness. General Suu Kyi was 59. He had leukemia. According to family members, he was the 4th-ranking member of the country's military junta. Hopes for peace are diminishing in Darfur as a main party in the south is withdrawn from talks. The party claims Sudanese government leaders will not share power. Violence in the region has escalated. Pakistan's Supreme Court will rule on whether a government amnesty lifting corruption charges against former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto is legal. Some 4 million residents are being forced from their homes near China's Three Gorges Dam. State television warned of an environmental catastrophe. They said the dam could cause landslides, soil erosion, deteriorating quality of drinking water, and pollution caused by the submersion of industrial sites. Many of the people to be moved have already been moved once before. Senator Edward Kennedy underwent emergency surgery today without complications to unblock an artery in his neck. His office says he'll remain in the hospital for a few days. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
P.M. Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, along with the SETI Institute and the University of California at Berkeley, they've begun activating the Allen Telescope Array. SETI astronomer Seth Shostak said, quote, "It's the first major telescope in the world built specifically for undertaking a search for extraterrestrial intelligence," end quote. The 16th team of astronauts have docked at the ISS to relieve the crew that's been orbiting the Earth for the past 6 months. Commander Peggy Whitson will be in charge of the lab for the next 6 months. Lipsticks being recalled, U.S. Consumer Rights Group found that more than half of 33 brands tested contained lead. The federal budget deficit fell to $162.8 billion over the last budget year. That's the lowest amount of red ink in 5 years. The Commerce Department reports that despite sluggish department store sales, overall, in September, retail sales grew more than expected. They went up by 0.6% for the month. Oracle has made an unsolicited offer of $6.7 billion for software rival BAE Systems. Rival bids are expected. Today was another record day on Wall Street, and a new record was set for the price of a barrel of crude oil as well. Oil settled at $83.69 after reaching $84 a barrel today due to tensions in the Middle East and a drop in U.S. supplies. The Dow gained 78 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman. Six, six, six.
the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 55 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day, and today is Friday, October the 12th. If you are listening at approximately 9 p.m. on a Friday evening on October the 12th, it is indeed a live show. The lines are open. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4 head-on. That's 877, the number 4 head-on. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. I normally try to check email during the breaks, and the mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests, including the audio archives to the past shows. You'll find links to the guests themselves, their sites, and to the audio of the shows. You'll find links to the chat room, which is active as we speak. I'm looking at it right now. Some of our most fabulous people are there. You'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and, of course, links to help you locate the music on the show. Interesting day today. Lots went on about... let me start here. It was a quiet day. It was cool, actually. It never got above the high 70s, I guess, for this time of year. It was very cool. It started about 64. So what I'm getting at is there was really no stress on the electricity lines out here. In fact, most everybody, I'm sure, had their air conditioning off. There was no reason to run it. But about 1 o'clock, suddenly there was this earth-shattering boom. It was heard for at least a mile around, and instantly the power went out. As it turns out later, we found out that a transformer blew up somewhere along the line. It was kind of a mystery because it certainly wasn't being overstressed. It certainly wasn't hot, but it picked today with no wind, no rain, and cool weather to literally explode. Consequently, the good part is I got to use the generator today. One of our guests donated an electrical, gasoline-powered generator to run the show, and in case of a power failure, in case of something like this, which pretty much saved the day, because if I had been without electricity for the period of time that the power was out, without the generator, I wouldn't have been able to complete many tasks. And I was working with guests, booking guests, and looking up news and all sorts of things. I couldn't afford the downtime. So thank you, generous donor of the yellow generator that started on the first pull and powered me through the entire power interruption. By the way, those are red gas cans that go with it, and a beautiful green heavy-duty cable that runs in here to the computers. And I can even run a fan off of it. It worked beautifully. Thank you very much. And let's see, where was I headed next? Oh, yes, the guests. We have three new guests today. It was a busy day talking with guests. Great news there. One is, and this guest is coming up this coming Wednesday, the 17th. We confirmed with Lisa today, Lisa Krensky. She is the executive director of the LGBT Aging Project in Massachusetts. She'll be joining us at 9 p.m. The 17th, which is next Wednesday. Looking forward to hearing from her. She will be a person who has trained at least 2,000 people in Massachusetts, caregivers, care facilities, regarding the needs of the LGBT community. She will represent a hands-on perspective for the LGBT issues. As I told you a couple of nights ago, that's something we're going to pursue. Delightful person. I spoke with her on the phone also. We confirmed another guest for next week. This will be a music guest. Don't know if we will have him which day. We're shooting for the 16th, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be the 16th. It's depending on when his producer can send down some music tracks, but we're pretty sure it's going to be the 16th. It's Daryl Russ. Daryl is a singer-songwriter, and he's from the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area. Another amazing music guest. This guy's, he ranges from disco to country and western. This will be all over the map. Actually, some of his tracks are soul, some are country and western, some rhythm and blues, some high-energy dance. So I'm looking forward to having Daryl Russ on, and we believe that will be the 16th. Also, set up this day today is... Gosh, it was a strange day. I've been up for a long, long time. It's one of those 5 o'clock days. This will definitely be a night that I wander around behind the chickens. Bear with me. We confirmed with Mark Silver today. Mark Silver will be a music guest on the 30th. Mark Silver will be an interesting guest. He is an out songwriter and singer, but Mark has a traditional bluegrass and country Americana style. His band is called the Mark Silver Music, and he will join us at 9 p.m. We'll be playing some of his tracks too, and he's all bluegrass with the banjos and the whole bit. You're just another stereotype busting guest. You just wouldn't expect one of them old gay guys to be playing the banjo. He sounds like Grandpa, but anyway, I've listened to some of his music and it's delightful stuff. So yeah, a lot went on today: explosions and guests, and let's see. Oh, we have some wonderful music tonight. We really do. We won't be doing that now. We'll be doing it later in the show. One is a Melissa Etheridge track, which we'll definitely get to. I have a story about that track, so I definitely want to run that this evening. Later in the evening, we'll have Jimmy Somerville with the almighty mix of Can't Take My Eyes Off of You and the Kinky Boys with The Only Way Is Up, an almighty mix. Now, I didn't realize this until just before the show, but apparently both of these tracks, the Somerville and Kinky Boys tracks, were used in season 2 of Queer as Folk. Interesting combination that I would pull those two, but they were, in fact, used in Queer as Folk. I don't know about you. I couldn't handle Queer as Folk. I dutifully got the DVD, and after it came out on DVD, I do everything on DVD. And so, season 1, disc 1 arrived, and I popped it in, and I got to tell you, I could not get through just the first episode. I just could. To me, it was like Valley of the Dolls with socks stuffed in their pants. I thought they were trashy. I just couldn't take that. Oh, Lord. Anyway, I've never seen the Queer as Folk. Apparently, a lot of people really liked it, so I'll probably get in trouble. But I didn't. I thought it proved my point that people will never ever get to know us by watching the television shows and the movies about us or that they think are about us. The only way they'll ever get to know us is talking with us. And again, the toll free number is 877. The number 4, head on. Also, the Somerville track, he did Small Town Boy back in 1985, and he has a long history in singing various tracks. Let's see, what's happening? Oh, yes, tomorrow, Saturday, I'm going to have lunch with a few of my sisters, maybe as many as 3. We're not sure how many we can gather up at a restaurant in Thomasville, Georgia. Looking forward to it. It is a restaurant that serves authentic Southern food. All of the food there is grown very nearby Thomasville by local farmers in the area, and it's an amazing place to go eat. Thomasville, Georgia is a place that Jane Fonda was often spotted back in the day when Jane Fonda was hooked up with Ted Turner. Ted Turner had a palatial estate in North Florida, about 15 miles from here. Way back in the woods, you couldn't see it, except the roof was copper. You could sometimes, in the weather, the trees, the leaves had fallen. The roof was copper, so it turned that copper patina. It was kind of a greenish color. A typical mansion. Ted Turner had a huge fight with an elderly black gentleman, a poor man, lived in kind of a shack, that his property, the black man's property, joined Ted Turner. Here's Ted Turner, a multimillionaire, of course, or maybe even a billionaire, God knows. This is back when Jane was with him. Maybe this is why Jane left him. In any case, there was a dispute about a property line. Ted Turner insisted that his property line ran about the width of a road, like a two-lane highway, about that width into the fellow's property. Now, and the guy only had like 2 or 3 acres, so this is a minuscule amount of land for Ted Turner, who literally owns land all over the place and homes and all over the world. Minuscule amount of land for Ted Turner, but it meant a lot to the elderly black gentleman. In fact, he had a little garden growing on it, and that was part of his garden. But Ted Turner like went to court and was fighting tooth and nail this poor black guy to take this small strip of land off the edge of his property. Ted Turner insisted he owned it, and it had been in the black family's in their care or ownership for many years. Of course, Ted Turner is a newcomer to the area, and the black fellow was not. So I'm not sure how that dispute ever turned out, but I thought it was pretty damn trashy. It seems to me you would just let something like that go, but in fact, he did not let that go. Just thought I would tell you the Ted Turner story, and Jane Fonda story. So no wonder she ditched him. Wonder what Jane Fonda's up to now. Inquiring minds want to know. October. The Center for Military Readiness held its 12th annual celebration. It was at the National Guard Association building in Washington, D.C. And the focus was on gays in the military. The mood there was not very celebratory. In fact, the mood was rather depressed and sad. Oh, the poor kids, the nasty old gays in the military ruined the celebration. And Elaine Donnelly, she's the president, says, depending on the elections, she says, things could change with startling speed. The military is about to be hit if the elections turn out wrong. She said, with a real tsunami. And she stressed the need for the Center for Military Readiness folks to remain on alert, which really basically means send us money. And we have a caller, and I'm very pleased to tell you it was one of our previous guests who did a remarkable job. He was the fellow who talked with us about Sergeant Leonard Matlovich and about the history of gays serving in the military. It's a surprise call. I wasn't expecting him, but that was a topic I was starting out with. And it is Mr. Denny Meyer, and I'm so glad to have you on the show. Good evening, Denny.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good evening, sir.
Well, I just found myself awake tonight and decided to tune in, and there you are talking about us again.
Can't seem to leave the subject alone. Don't know what's wrong with me.
So, now, what were you saying? Go on with what you were saying. So
I was about to go on with the CMR, the Center for Military Readiness. This woman, Elaine Donnelly, is the president.
God.
And she has she's a grim-faced, sour, dour-looking woman. And apparently it wasn't that big of a success. There were it listed about 150 individual sponsors and members, but really basically about 38 people showed up. There was no color guard, no Pledge of Allegiance. The audience there was no diversity either. It was all your standard concerned white folks there. 38 of them to be exact. And there was an Army lieutenant, Bob Maggins, who spoke. Do you know about him?
He's another Elaine Donnelly. Yeah, he works for the Pentagon, and he always brings up negative things. There's a whole conversation that's also going on something called military.com in the gay and lesbian section. You know, it's a kind of blog thing. And there's a regular slugfest where he tosses in things there, as well as other places, and makes public statements. And, he's about as irresponsible as General Pace, you know. I mean, these are people of the Pentagon that are supposed to be separate from church. Penn State, you know, and giving their personal views, which have zero bearing on how to run the military, although, of course, with the current administration, all those lines have blurred.
Well, McGinnis, he said during his speech, he said that repealing the ban on open service by gays and lesbians in the military would, quote, destroy the indispensable glue, the cohesion, and it would introduce sexual tension and favoritism, and it would cause less unit bonding, less leadership, diseases, of course, that's always in the list, lower retention, people will be offended, and forcing the heterosexual soldiers to serve with open homosexuals would cause many to hang up their boots, and I'm wondering if he really meant hang up their jock straps. You have to wonder.
Well, when you talked about glue and bonding, I was getting kind of excited, but anyway.
there are a number of, yeah, if you read this stuff, it really is. It's a whole Freudian weird thing going on.
Well, see, Magnus or whatever his name is, or Maggot or whatever,
yeah,
the exception. You know, most people who carry on like this are like Elaine Donnelly, who never served. And all...
It's hard to say why. There's this notion of, you know, the old-time religion, that anyone who challenges any of their fundamental core beliefs makes them very uncomfortable. These people are always the people you have to drag screaming and kicking into the future. You know, if any gay person comes along and says, hey, look at me, I'm productive. You know, I'm a member of society. I have values and ideals and just like you. I'm just a little bit different than you, but you know, they're totally freaked out by that. Since they were young, they believed that gays and lesbians are perverted and miserable and lonely people who live very short and desperate lives. Speaking of desperate, what was that bit on the news just prior to the show about the lipstick with lead in it? Is there any end of what's... reminded me of Desperate Housewives with the lipstick. You see how my mind works in mysterious ways. More lead from China. But anyway, back to the other subject. The AIDS epidemic had a effect that was not planned. In fact, it amazed many people. It forced thousands and thousands and thousands of people out of the closet and was a force to be recognized. I believe we have Denny back.
Yep, I'm here.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
I just kind of was suddenly found myself talking to the wind.
Yeah, I did too. Apparently, there was a hiccup on the screen. I had the stream. I had confidence that Bob would get you back. But I was saying when you were offline, there was another fellow there named Woodruff. And Woodruff was going on about the at this same conference, was going on that the don't ask, don't tell policy has been misinterpreted. And if you look at the legislative history of it, it was never, ever intended to allow gays and lesbians in the military. It was designed to keep them out, but the law has been perverted over the years. He uses that term. That's Woodruff's position.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw something about that the last few weeks. And it's, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know. On the one hand, it certainly was intended to keep us out. But the law is pretty clear. It says we may serve. And that's, you know, so long as we don't say anything, it's like, you know, a Baptist wanting to serve, but he can't tell anybody he's a Baptist. or... Well, who was that person who said, thank God I didn't have to tell my mother I was black? I keep trying to remember.
What a wonderful line. I don't think I'd heard that.
I searched for that, and I forgot who it was, but it's some famous author. But, you know, it's sort of the same thing, you know. The other side intended that it would keep us out, and it certainly, you know, has been interpreted that way by a lot of people in the military. But the law is pretty clear, you know. It says you may serve, as long as you can't, don't say anything and don't do anything. Well, okay. We ought to make the same rule for heterosexuals then.
Good point. Denny, was it you that was telling us when you were on before, was it you that was making the point, one of our guests did it, I think it was probably you, made the point that in no case in any modern civilization has it been gay marriage been legalized until after gays were accepted into the military. Was it you that made that point?
No. I made a similar point. I mean, I've talked so much and written so much, I don't know if I said this on your show or... But, you know, in 1948, Truman integrated blacks into the armed forces of the United States by executive order. And that's some 20 years before all the other laws depriving blacks of rights fell, and before laws giving full equality became. So, in a sense, he set the precedent. This is before desegregation of school buses or public buses. This is before integration of schools and so on. You know, and in fact, in those days, there were miscegenation laws besides. So, it's a similar point. But I did not say, I don't think I said that, you know, marriage fell. But, you know, listen, this is one of the reasons that the right wing wants to block gays in the military, even though there's no point in keeping gays out of the military where needed, is that they fear that'll be the first step. Because once you have gays serving, then, of course, what if he gets killed? What about his partner's benefits? What about his insurance and so on and so forth? It's, you know, the current law that's in Congress. Am I still there?
Yes, well, sir. You're with me.
Okay.
I'm hanging on every word.
After that first bounce, the law that's in Congress right now, the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, which would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and allow gays to serve openly, specifically says... This does not in any way require the provision of partner benefits, something like that. And that was put in there in 2005 when the raw law was first proposed to placate the right wing. So that, you know, but that's what they fear, that it's just another step toward marriage. And, well, it should be, but, it isn't necessarily, because in Australia, gays have been serving now for about 10 years, and they still don't have marriage. So, and in England, they're just beginning to get marriage going. So,
well, it seems to
Israel,
me that...
in Israel, gays have always served, and they certainly don't have gay marriage there.
Yeah, in fact, there was a movie about a love affair between a couple of Israeli soldiers. I don't remember the name.
Got it right here. Something.
It's a wonderful.
Yossi and Jaeger.
Yes, yes. It
yeah,
was a Yossi wonderful movie. It
yeah.
really was. It was kind
it's
of sad.
Short.
If I, yeah. I'm so pleased you've seen that. It was a great movie. But listen, did you hear this in the news today about the National Guard unit that had spent the longest time in Iraq, more time there than anyone else? They were deployed for 729 days, and they were brought home.
Oh, this is a real disgrace.
It is. Please tell us that story. I'm sure you know it better than I.
I read the same thing you did. Apparently, there's some kind of rule about getting all kinds of educational benefits and stuff after 730 days. And supposedly, this was just an administrative error. Give me a break. I mean, this was, you know, a real Bush administration attempt to screw all these people serving 18 months, many of them getting killed, blown up. And they want to save on educational benefits.
Yes, which they would be entitled to.
I'm holding my tongue here from cursing a blue streak.
Well, it's internet radio. You could actually say just about
yes.
But the thing is that if they had been deployed one more day, 730 days, they could have come home and gotten all of the educational benefits that they felt that they were promised. But they deployed them for 720.
There's people in Congress who are really pissed off about this. So I think that's going to be fixed, because that's, I mean, you know, this is just typical of this administration, you know. Every sneaky, filthy little thing they can do, you know, getting a governor in what state is that, Mississippi or Alabama, put in jail, and, you know, all kinds of politically, you know, arranged things, destroying democracy and the Constitution, and now screwing our own soldiers. Oh, did I say that? And so it's just typical.
Yeah.
Speaking of the news, did you hear about this lesbian that was killed in, on base at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan?
I'm so glad you brought that up. I intended to bring that up the day that news article came out, but didn't get a chance to. I forgot what happened. What's going on with that? I don't know what happened after that first report. She was murdered, apparently.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, there was a bullet through her head. She was executed behind the building. And nobody knows what's going on, to be honest. And I hear about these things from the inside, and I haven't heard a thing yet. That's all that's known, is that, you know, she was found behind a building with a bullet through the head. And, you know, apparently, well, first of all, of course, she wasn't openly out, but a lot of people knew, as it is these days, that people can serve openly in their own unit. And apparently she was in the financial accounting section or something, and she saw some funny inconsistencies, didn't like what she saw, and she was talking about it. And so they don't know if she was killed because she was about to blow the whistle, or because she was a lesbian, or both. As usual, you know, the Pentagon tried to just smooth it over. But apparently Senator Kennedy and a few others heard about it. They're jumping up and down and demanding an investigation. So this is a pending scandal.
Well, I'm glad they are. My thought, I'm wondering if it was, it's hard to say if this is hate crime motivated or not. Or, you know, there's bundles of literally cash being handed out in Iraq that this scandal will take us 100 years to unravel. God knows what she saw or who she threatened.
Well, there you go. I mean, you know, look, I mean, you know, the whole war is designed to give money to, you know, the friends of the administration with, what do you call those, no-bid contracts. So, I mean, you know, and they're just losing money right and left, you know.
This whole thing about being stuck in Iraq, you know, literally that's exactly what the Bush administration wants, because it means that our military troops are sitting on top of possibly one of the world's largest untapped oil supplies. I believe the estimates are that there could be as many as 220 trillion, or was it billion, I believe, barrels of oil. And then there's some sort of a contract where for 30 years, that the Iraqis are basically forced to sign, for 30 years, all of those wells, except for 17, will be in control of U.S. companies, and only 17 in control of the Iraqis. So in 30 years, or was it 20 years, 30 or 20 years, the oil will be gone anyway.
I didn't know about that. Let me guess. Does the U.S. company that gets the deal start with the letter H?
Yes. Well, yes. And no doubt that a subsidiary thereof, you know, the Bush is so tightly involved in the oil industry.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the company he ran into the dirt before he was promoted up? I don't remember, but yeah, the oil industry, you know, Texas. It's a shame, really, but this is precisely what he wants for our military troops,
mm-hmm.
to be there for, and nobody gets that. We are not fighting for our freedom.
Unfortunately, there's all these angry people on top of the oil. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure these people have a long, how can I put it, racial memory. This is a culture that's been around far longer than, you know, than America's. I mean, we're just basically newcomers. These people's cultural memory goes back for, what, 1,000 years, 2,000 years at least?
1,000? That's the cradle of civilization, you know.
They're not going to forget about
it. That's where the title came from, you know.
Right, exactly, Denny. Thank you. And they're not going to forget about this. This is going to be an ongoing. I have grim thoughts about where the world is headed. I just can't seem to think my way out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, why we need more gay people in the world, because we cross boundaries and love each other.
That's absolutely true.
I mean, like, even in Israel, where you've got these two sides that hate each other's guts, there's all these Palestinian Arabs and Israeli Jews who happen to be lovers, you know. During the first Intifada, they were just screwed. But now they have cell phones, and they can talk to each other at least, you know. But this is a story that hasn't been told much, but it's a known thing. And there's this very irritating little place in Jerusalem, irritating to the government and straight people and everybody, called Jerusalem Open House, which is 100% integrated Arab-Israeli. And, it makes both sides kind of crazy, because here are these people that love each other. And that's the only solution, really, you know.
Well, you have a good point. This thing about family, you know, that seems to be what is so deeply objected to, that gays and lesbians would dare to call each other family. The traditional family has always been, blood heirs and passed along. This, to be able to cross those lines, as you just said, love each other, blurs this whole family relationship to the point they can't take it. Oops, it means that everybody could possibly love everybody, not just your family, and it scares the shit out of them.
Well, that's, in all these other cultures, marriages are arranged, it has to do with how many sheep and cattle are being transferred to the bride's family, usually. And, you can't do that if two guys fall in love. Well, you could, but then how do you figure out who gives who the sheep,
Yeah, I often wonder about that, how all that works. I guess we have to make it up as we go, because we sure as hell have no history, or at least history that they'll tell us about. These are interesting times. And
About history here. Now, I'm not a biblical guy, but I understand all these stories about gay love is, it's right there in the Bible along with everything else, So, I went to a funeral a couple of weeks ago of some gay clergyman who belonged to some, I don't understand all this stuff. I'm Jewish, but it's all kind of highfalutin Catholicism. And anyway, he was a clergyman in the church of St. Sagius and St. Bacchus, who apparently were Roman Christians in the Middle East way back in ancient times, who supposedly were lovers. And there's the church has this icon, a painting of these two young-looking men with a halo and a heart shape around them. Oh, it's just too much, really.
Really?
There is history in the Bible, Well, of course, everybody reads it selectively,
It's very interesting. Speaking of religion, we had a rabbi on a couple of months ago. He was terribly interesting. If you missed that, I'll send you the link to his show audio. He is a gay man, right? Yeah, he is a gay man, and he is, his church, or his synagogue, rather, is in South Florida, and it's a heterosexual for the large most part, and they just don't care. It seems to be a lot going on there. And also, I wanted to tell you too. Remember, you told me about the pastor of an MCC in New York, and you said that she was like a very energetic, incredible person to talk to. Telling me about? We had Nancy Wilson on. She's the moderator of MCC, and I asked her about that. I said, I understand that there is a particular minister in New York that is a real pistol. At the time, I had pulled up her name from the notes I had gotten.
Pat Bumgartner.
Yes, that was it. And Nancy just laughed out loud. She said, yes, she is a pistol. I've got to get her on sometime. I found out about her from you.
Oh, okay, yeah. She's a pretty busy person, but I guess you might be able to talk her into it. MCC, of course, they're all across the country and in a couple of other countries. And they just a couple of weeks ago came out with a big policy statement in favor of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, in fact. And they've got a number of female pastors who served in the military as chaplains. And in fact, by next issue, again next week, this is all coincidental, we'll be featuring two of their stories.
Really? Very interesting.
Yeah, there's a couple of pastors already who's military chaplains, gay military chaplains, that I've told about already on the website. There's Paul Dodd and Scott West. But those aren't MCC chapters, chaplains. But see, what's coming out here as I interviewed these people is to be a military chaplain, you have to be sponsored by a denomination. And for a denomination to sponsor somebody for the first time, they have to have a candidate. Well, of course, conveniently, you know, this has never worked out for MCC. Because the military doesn't particularly want queer chaplains, and of course MCC is essentially an LGBT church.
Right.
And there has been a kind of drift in the last 10, 15 years toward more and more conservative, and I believe the word that was used with me is evangelical, denominations. In other words, read right-wing conservative.
Exactly.
Becoming more and more dominant as military chaplains.
Interesting. That's happening in the Presbyterian Church. Apparently there is an evangelical Presbyterian group forming now, and they're bleeding off churches from the main Presbyterian Church also. And I've even read that their evangelicals are slowly infiltrating the Amish, for crying out loud.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. All I know about is military thing.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm Jewish. I hardly understand all this stuff. But anyway, you know, they apparently, you know, there's this dominance, and, you know, the whole thing's controlled by the Pentagon and the head chaplain there, or chief of chaplains, and so on. And, I mean, we've been reading these scandals, particularly in the Air Force in the last year or two, where, you know, everybody was required to go to services, even if they were Jewish.
Yes,
and they,
yes. Yes, and encouraging them to see
religious abuse. And
yes, yes.
They were told to knock it off, and they still didn't. You know, this is the Air Force Academy.
Yes, so, in Colorado, I believe.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is just the creeping, what's the word, blurring of church and state, you know, is taking place all over the place in the last 6 years. Wonder why. And
my understanding, you know, that there's a general understanding amongst most of the troops who are accepting this indoctrination that this is not a war against the people who, you know, attacked America. It is a religious war. They're fully on board with this religious war thing. This is horrifying.
Well, I think that's more an attitude of certain people at the top whose names know. But I've talked to a lot of troops. I don't think a lot of them believe that. You know, they just say, we've got a job to do over here, that's that. You know, they don't. This is the General Paces and this Magnus. And who's that other guy who talks to churches a lot? It's Boykin.
You know, oh, yes, Boykin did it in the
around.
But, uniform,
you know,
I think.
This is people who've gotten, you know, head crazy with their power. But I don't think the general troops really think that way, you know. Because, you see, I've written about this, is it this current issue or the last issue? I wrote this thing called Team Players. And if you've got a guy in the armed forces in Iraq on a fighting unit, and he thinks he's better than somebody else, whether it is he thinks he's better than Muslims or Jews or gay people or Black people or Hispanic people or white people, you know, that guy is really, really dangerous because he can't be relied on as a team player to support all the troops that are around him, because we have a very unique thing in this country. We have the only country with a fully integrated armed forces with white, black, Asian, Hispanic, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, all people serving together. As Truman conceived it, and as it's grown in the last 60 years, We're the only fighting force that is so fully integrated, and we could be an example to the world. And it's the guys who are prejudiced that don't belong. Okay.
Well, I completely agree
with
you.
It's the guy, you know, if you have a guy who is cited by all these homophobes that say we shouldn't serve, if you have a guy who cannot stand to serve with gay people, you talk to that guy and he also cannot stand to serve alongside women because he's got such a big ego, he thinks that they're only there for one thing. And that was said when Clinton integrated women into the armed forces. In the 90s, these guys said, oh, I can't serve next to a woman. I'll be too distracted. I mean, what an idiot. And the same thing was said when Truman integrated blacks. They said, well, we can't serve with them. I mean, these people are not just prejudiced against gay people. They're prejudiced against anybody who's different from themselves. You know, if this guy's a Baptist, he won't be able to serve alongside a Lutheran. And they're very, very dangerous. They don't belong in the service. They're the ones that are not team players. They don't deserve to wear the proud uniform of America.
I completely agree with you in every way. And, in fact, I carry that feeling over to what's happening in churches. You know, you can't miss this in the news. You've got the Episcopal Church supposedly breaking into because of the gay issue, and now the Presbyterian Church. I say let them go. I say good riddance, and let them go and do whatever they're going to do in their own separate buildings, because it can't be anything but a drag on what mainstream religion is about.
Well,
in reality.
Well, that's for sure. But, you know, it's easy for you and I to say that, you know, but of course it's all about money, you know. So,
well, it is, and I am so proud of there was a story I did not too long ago about, it happened in New York, you may know about this. It was apparently a group of 25 rabbis or leaders in the Jewish community, the Orthodox Jews, went into a room, a meeting. And it was like, what, a day later or 10 hours later, they came out and said, you know, we've talked about this. We've gone over all the laws and that yes, gay people should be able to serve openly in the church. And it seems that the Jewish faith, which is heavily Old Testament based or Torah based, understands and gets that we're all equal in the sight of God much better than these people that are supposed to be following Jesus in the New Testament, and they're always these Jesus people are always going back to the Old Testament, and which is your area of specialty, to beat the hell out of us. Yet 25 conservative Orthodox Jews.
I don't think they were conservative. Listen.
Okay, tell us.
Yeah, listen, a room full of Jews is like a room full of gay people. You know, we just can't agree with each other. And, you know, the Jews don't have a pope. We don't have, you know, there's no organized leadership. You know, there's councils and, you know, but they're just convenient groupings. So, you know, I mean, there's like at least four main branches. But, you know, the conservative and orthodox ones are just as prejudiced and pig-headed as as anybody else. You know, they're very, very prejudiced. They're no different than Roman Catholic priests. You know, it's all the same thing. And, I'm not sure about the group you heard about, but I don't think they were conservatives.
All I can tell you is the article said they represented Orthodox.
That's very unlikely. There's Hasidic, who are the most racist and prejudiced against anybody, particularly gay people. Then there's Orthodox, and they're kind of the same thing, except that, you know, Orthodox kind of work for a living, wear regular clothes. And they're very, very narrow-minded. Then you have what's called conservative, but in other countries it's called progressive, and they're the ones who actually do very progressive things, and they're the ones who are likely to... I mean, there's not one organized thing called conservative Judaism, see? There's no head of that. There's just different groupings, and some of them are way to the left, and others are way to the right. And so they're the ones on the left that, you know, will raise money for Africa and have gay and lesbian rabbis and things like that. And then you have the Reform, which is basically a suburban bingo club. And they're actually more conservative than conservative because, you know, they don't want anybody, gay people running around. So, you'd have to prove it to me, but I don't think it was Orthodox rabbis who said gay people could serve.
Well, you know, this evangelical movement that's invading the military, that's anti-Jewish, too, because, you know, they're all, you know, what is it, Armageddon, and Jesus will come back, and we get to kill all the Jews that won't accept Jesus, and this is all rolled into the anti-gay, and, you know, these people are intolerable.
Well, you know, it's all part of starting war in the Middle East to bring on the rapture, you know, the end of the world, you know, these people are crazy.
Right, and as if God needed, okay, let's just assume for a moment that I believe that there's a rapture coming, as if God would need their help to bring it on. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh,
it's ludicrous.
Do indeed. I mean, listen, when the grand rebbe of the Lubavitchers, the Hasidic, died, oh gosh, it must be 15 years ago now or something, and they believed he was the Messiah. And this was, you know, before cell phones were very popular, and they all walked around with beepers. And the purpose of the beeper was to let them know when the Messiah returned. As if they
oh, you're kidding me. That is horrifying. I cannot believe that. A rapture beeper.
Well, it wasn't the rapture, but, you know, but anyway, you know, but I just, you know, kind of laughed my butt off, you know. And, of course, you know, these things didn't work right, so there were all these false alarms, and some of them took it very seriously and went out and sold everything, you know.
That is too much. I had not heard that, and it sounds right on target. It really sounds right on target.
I mean, you know, this is in New York. You'd think it would be somewhere in Alabama or something. No offense to intelligent people there, but, you know. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I guess today it would be with cell phones. By the way, there was a story out yesterday. Apparently, the first openly gay man in public office, but it was elected in Alabama just a few days ago. It was it's a huge, and apparently he was elected to one of the school board district. In any case, an openly gay man, and apparently you know the school board and banning books and no tango and me and all this. It's going to be huge in Alabama. I'm sure this will stir up.
You know, this guy ought to get a Medal of Honor first for courage.
Well, he really should. There's
I wouldn't want to walk around there saying I'm openly gay.
Well, there are lots of stories, Denny, about that. You've probably heard some of them. I've come across and shared some of them here. But it's pretty scary. And for blacks, too. Yeah, and in Mississippi, too. By the way, we were there's a wonderful movie, if you haven't seen it. One of our listeners told us about it. It's called Small Town Gay Bar.
Don't know that
Have you,
one. No.
It's fairly new. It's a documentary, actually, about a very small gay bar that exists in the extreme rural south, I believe, near Meridian, Mississippi, I think, in that general area, close to, like, the Alabama line, and how they exist and how they have to hide they're real people, and I've seen it at I've even seen it at what is it, Blockbuster. It's called Small Town Gay Bar. Wonderful movie.
That reminds me of I don't know if it's still around, but it's near you down there, Parliament House.
Yes, that is in Orlando. It's near Disney World, but maybe it's a part of Disney World, let's pretend.
Well, somebody dragged me there once about 30 years ago, and I just couldn't believe it. Here's this ancient motel that's been turned into a kind of giant cruising ground with several bars, including a drag show bar and so on.
Yes, it's it's amazing.
All these southern boys from Alabama and Georgia apparently on weekends drove down 600 miles to go to this place. Just to kind of let their hair down. And they thought they were dressing really, really wild because they were wearing checkered shirts.
Oh, my.
And there's a scene there, but it's really, I can't tell it. It's too filthy. But anyway, it was an exchange between the audience and this big, big drag queen.
Yes, it, oh my, I've got it
to share. You can tell it if you want to.
Well, that Parliament House, so that's located on the Orange Blossom Trail, which is also famous for hookers.
Oh, I see.
Oh yeah, it's all up and down Orange Blossom Trail. That is the that's the sexual Disney World in Orlando.
Well, we did go to Disney World. You know, it was all part of the same trip. You know, Kennedy Space Center, Disney World, Parliament House. You know, so.
And this was what about how long ago was that?
Oh goodness, must have been 35 years ago that I was there. You know, before I was old, you know.
I feel that way. You'd have to drag me down there. It's just too much trouble, way too much trouble. Denny, when you talk to people who are coming back from Iraq, do you get to talk to very many Jewish fellows who are over there and maybe even gay? What are their, or even not non-Jewish, what are their personal experiences like in working with the troops, you know, their co-workers, so to speak?
Well, I haven't really discussed religion. I mean, you know, I talk to as many gay and lesbian troops coming back as I can because, I mean, I have a website and stories to tell. That's what it's all about. I haven't really, you know, nobody's brought up religion. Well, other than these chaplain clergy, nobody's really brought up religion. So I can look into that, though. I know some people who... would know about that, but I talk to a lot of gay and lesbian troops, and by and large, they have served openly in their units, and nobody has a problem with it.
So it's a made-up problem. This is a problem that
essentially the only problem that does exist is the official government homophobia. You see, which. Teaches people that they're supposed to distrust somebody. And, of course, there's the law, where, you know, if the command finds out, the command has very little choice but to discharge them. This gives power to the few non-team players that are around, the few prejudiced people, because guys are open in their units, and then the wrong one finds out because he hates anybody who's different. And I heard of one person who was being blackmailed. And, you know, it gives power to the lowest form of humanity. As I said, the prejudiced people. And without that policy, those people would be gone overnight. And the unit morale would be much better. There just isn't a problem except for, you know, troublemakers.
Well, you know, they're...
Who have nothing better to do because they're basically cowards and stuff like that. I'm sorry, go ahead. Well,
and they are basically cowards. And I was about to, I was reminded in the main chat room that, shame on me for not knowing this already, that today is the anniversary of what happened to Matthew Shepard in Wyoming. Yes, and I did not realize that. And I'm supposed to know things like that. As I said when I began the show, it was an odd day. I didn't have, but in any case, it was October 12th, 1998. And if you recall, it was the two guys that did that were the sort of bigoted people or you know, predators, let us say.
Mm-hmm. And right.
Yes, but the community as a whole, even though basically it's Wyoming is like a small town, the community was horrified have this stigma placed on Wyoming, and in fact, the huge majority of people, citizens of Wyoming, were just horrified about this,
horrified in part because they'd been silent, you know, and they realized they shouldn't have been. But of course, a great deal has been written about that, and several movies and plays, you know, the Laramie Project and so on. And, I mean, if anybody died for a cause, it really woke everybody up out there. And, basically, it made them realize, you know, that they have to be... They can't be silent. You know, they have to really own their gay and lesbian people.
Well, it really did wake people up. And what's the shame about it, though, is that in reality, it's not as extreme, but it happens every day. Gay and lesbian folks are beaten every day and robbed every day. In fact, in Orlando, just last week, a fellow was walking across the street to go to a bar. It happened to be a gay club, and as he was crossing the street, he heard a car engine rev up. And he made it to the sidewalk just in time, but the car went over onto the sidewalk at high speed to knock him. It lifted him in the air and put him way over in a ditch, and then swerved back over to the house. So these attacks happen every day. Not to the and it reminds me, the Matthew Shepard thing is almost it's similar to this Jenna thing, this Jenna 6 thing where the noose is hanging on the oak tree. People just don't realize that it's not an intermittent thing at all. It's a continuous thing.
Well, you see, this is where we get to responsibility, you see, because we have currently the great divider running the country. And, you know, for years the administration has been, you know, saying, well, we're not responsible for all this stuff, but they are, you know. They're subtly encouraging all this hatred and division, because there's crazy people all over the place who listen to the president and think, well, okay, I'll do what he wants, go out and kill somebody. You know, he doesn't like queers, he doesn't like blacks, so on and so forth. You know, they're really responsible. And you said it doesn't happen every day, but in fact, there have been many, many Matthew Shepherds. But they're black and Hispanic, and they don't get as much publicity, unfortunately, because the media itself has some responsibility there. Oh, it's just another minority, you know.
Well, it's true. It'll come up in the local media. The local media will focus on it for a few days, and then poof, it's gone. It never gets any national connection.
But there have been many Matthew Shepherds in the last 2 years, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I was thinking about. Well, yeah, and there's something that's been bothering me for a few days about that. You know, things compare. This article that came up a few days ago, two Saudi Arabian men are convicted of being gay, and they've been sentenced to 7,000 lashes each in Saudi Arabia. Now, obviously, 7,000 lashes would be fatal. So what they are in fact doing is they're taking them out and administering lashes until someone says they can't take it anymore. Then they're taking them back to jail for their backs to heal, and then taken out. So this could go on for literally years to accumulate 7,000 lashes if they survive that long. And I understand also that the maximum number of lashes ever dished out over there was 4,000. Things are so much worse in the Muslim societies, which are controlled by the church. Not that it's the fact that any time religion controls government, things get screwed up really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, these are the friends of the current administration, the Saudis. These are our allies, right?
This is absolutely true.
So how could you possibly say something like that?
Well,
somebody sent me something, and if there's anybody religious out there, prepare to be offended. But I don't know, maybe this has been floating around the internet for a while, but it was new to me. And it goes something like, it does not take religion for good people to do good things, or for evil people to do evil things. But it does take religion to get good people to do evil things.
That's a good point. Yes, that is a very good point.
I'm sorry I don't have the whole thing in front of me, but apparently somebody, you know, quite prominent and famous wrote that. You know, I didn't. So, but it's somebody, you know, some religious commentator or something who wrote this, apparently. And somebody dug it up. But it kind of hit me, you know. Terribly true, if you think about it.
I hope we can dig our way out of it. And Saudi jails are a nightmare. They're if you go to a Saudi jail, you are not entitled to an attorney. in the trial, you don't even know when the trial happens, and the trial, the public can't attend the trial. It's closed, and even huge cases are only like a couple of hours long. Most of them, it's just they pass it through very quickly. The situation there is very grim. So someone can actually be held in a jail there and be convicted and not know they've been convicted, and then suddenly one day the guards walk in and take them out and behead them. It's very grim, and it's horrifying. I
now
have
you're
a
talking
cult.
About Guantanamo, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, basically. But, yeah,
I mean, this is not a joke. I mean, our country, you know, has become like the places you're describing. This is the tragedy.
Again, like Guantanamo, the prisoners there are
things. Sorry?
I was saying, like Guantanamo, prisoners there are forced to sign confessions, and they get them by cigarette burns, electric shocks, pulling their nails. All these things are described.
That's America.
It's Gitmo. I wanted to point out, Denny, we have a caller on the line that wants to talk to you. We have Susan on the line. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Denny.
Hiya.
You mentioned a while back, and I got fascinated, which is why I didn't call him sooner, the Army Chaplains Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And having problems getting a GLBT chaplain. You're not the only people that have problems. The Wiccans also have problems. We have been trying to get a certified Wiccan chaplain. And we even had one that had impeccable credentials. He was already a chaplain, a Pentecostal chaplain. Mm-hmm. And he changed religions to Wicca.
Mm-hmm.
The Army tossed him out of the chaplain's corps.
I bet the technicality there was, from what I'm just beginning to learn about this from these chaplains that I've been interviewing, the technicality probably was that they did not have a Wiccan denomination that was certified. And
yeah, they did.
They did?
Yeah, it's in Fort Hood.
So how did they then toss them out? For what reason?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's all technicalities. And the reason we want gay and lesbian and other chaplains is to serve the troops who are, in fact, gay, lesbian, Wiccan,
mm-hmm.
etc. This was even mentioned to me by this MCC chaplain, that, you know, there's all these other religions, and they're all serving, and they're not being served. You know, now, any chaplain is supposed to be able, any military chaplain is supposed to be able to minister to all troops.
Yeah.
Right. I can just see a Wiccan, or gay. Well, now, gay people, of course, gay and lesbians, have been going to chaplains. And they've been reported. I mean, what a sin that is. The chaplains have reported them. This is supposed to be a confidential, you know, the most sacred thing there is, the most confidential, and they've been outed. So, yes, we do need chaplains of all religions,
mm-hmm.
To serve the Americans who have proudly volunteered to serve their country and are being shot up and suffering out there. And yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that if and when the Wiccans ever get, let's face it, we had to sue the government before we could even get a pentagram on a gravestone here recently. So, it's probably going It's going to take quite a bit of time, but if and when we ever get a Wiccan chaplain, you can bet your everything you own. If a gay soldier goes to a chaplain who is also Wiccan, he won't be outed. Because if there's one thing they know about, it's prejudice.
Yeah. Well, there's an approved list of gravestone markings. they're constantly expanding. I'm not sure if Wiccan symbols are on there. I thought they were now.
They were, except you could not get it used on a gravestone in a military ceremony, cemetery. That's why we had to call the United States into court.
That's okay, because that's what the list is all about. These are, you know, markers provided by the government, the VA.
Mm-hmm. I know. It was weird. The atheists had markers, but the Wiccans were not allowed to use pentagrams, so we had to hold them in court, which is...
Well, guys, on Friday evenings, we often do what we call the front porch, and we have another caller joining us. The front porch, Denny, by the way, is where we have multiple people on the call. We have caller Jim joining us. Welcome to the conversation, Jim.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
Good evening to you, sir.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
Yeah, I was just wanting to give you a reference here, and it's AR-165-1, which is the Army Regulation dealing with chaplains. And I'm looking right now at Chapter 8, 8-1, 8-2. It says, professionally qualified clergy are appointed as chaplains to provide for the free exercise of religion for Army personnel through the commander's command religious program. So basically, they can't discriminate against any type of religion, because whether you're Wiccan, whether you are even Satanist or whatever, they have a responsibility to provide certain religious rites or provide guidance to obtaining these things, burial, things of that nature.
Go ahead, Susan or Denny.
That's what the law says.
Unfortunately, the
law says one thing, and it's just like George Bush. The Constitution says one thing, and George just likely ignores it.
I don't know about that. I know that Army regulations are based on two things, public law and DOD directives.
Well, when I was in the military, one of my jobs was to maintain all those regulations, and this is before computers. We did it on paper. We had millions and millions. And they're just nobody could keep track of them. But, I think as what Susan said, you know, that may be the rule, but then there's interpretation. But, yes, any chaplain is supposed to be able to minister to any service member. Whether that's the practice or not, I don't know. All I know is that at least gay people are being outed. And according to Susan, the Wiccan people aren't being treated very well either.
Jim, Google Wicca plus Army Chaplains Corps, and you'll be able to pull up a Washington Post article about this.
Uh-huh.
It's interesting. It brings to mind this. There was a story from Colorado. An officer from Iraq, he was killed in Iraq, and of course his body was sent back, and his sister made arrangements for him, the funeral services to take place in one of the mega churches there in the area. The church arranged the funeral, the food had been planned, the church had put together some sort of a slide or video presentation talking about his life. Then all of a sudden, at the last minute, the church found out that, in fact, the man was gay and refused to allow him to be buried in that church, even though he was a veteran and killed in the war. These things happen all the time. It's really pretty horrifying.
Now, that story I know about. Yeah, this is in Texas. This guy is a veteran. His name was Simpson. In fact, you can look the story up on my website. I interviewed, I had somebody else interview the fellow's lover and mother, or even the mother is very supportive. And this family was involved in the church, in fact. And what happened was that, they sort of knew he was gay, and they were going to go ahead with it, but then there was supposed to be a slide presentation of photos of his wife, and there was one photo with him, with his lover. And they found that to be very objectionable, and you can look that up on my website. The picture is there. It's just two men in their 50s or 60s, one with his arm around the other. There's nothing dirty about it at all. And so they canceled the whole thing. And there was a big stink about it, of course, because, aside from everything else, he's a veteran who served his country. Bra- it's just, you know, this is the kind of prejudice we have. But it had nothing to do with the
supporting the troops to you.
Oh, yes, yeah, right.
Yeah, the right-wing version of supporting the troops.
So long as they're straight, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this don't ask, don't tell policy that was promulgated under President Clinton. I understand as of today that the average of the that three soldiers are separated daily today.
Two or three, that's right.
And whereas 1994, it was half that amount. So apparently, it was half that amount, and so apparently, the don't ask, don't tell policy has been flawed. And I really hope President Clinton is responsible for that, because he was commander in chief, and he could have kept his promise, his campaign promise back in 1992, 1993, but he didn't, and it was a cop out, and now it's created more problems than it's ever solved.
Well,
I have an interesting. Go ahead, Denny. I have something interesting to share. Go ahead, Denny.
Well, Clinton was kind of screwed on that thing. I mean, he was overpowered by Sam Nunn and Colin Powell, who was chairman of the Joint Chiefs at the time, and you know, they really roped him around. Clinton really intended to do that. I don't have the exact reference, but if you read David Mixner's writings on this, he'll explain, because he was on the inside of the White House as a gay man, and he kind of explains everything that happened. And it wasn't that simple, really. I mean, it's true, gay people, a lot of them were not forgiving Clinton, but it wasn't really his fault. There's also another reference in a book called Virtual Reality by Urvashi Vyad, where there's a whole chapter on what happened at that time. And it's very complicated political maneuvering. So it's not that simple to say that Clinton, you know, didn't follow through. It's much more complex, you know, real beltway stuff.
Well, I'm not trying to be overly simplistic as far as the powers of the elected president are concerned, but It seems as though they could have pursued the spirit as well as the letter of the law more judiciously, in my opinion. But, you know, that reference, AR-165-1, is interesting reading. And, not interesting, but nonetheless, it says that Catholics must have two-year educational training and background in order to qualify for whatever denomination they represent. But all that aside, there's another interesting book that I've told Peter about before, and it's by Randy Schultz, who wrote the book And the Band Played On, and this one is entitled Conduct Unbecoming. And I recommend this book highly. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
Conduct Unbecoming was written before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and contains almost all the history of gay and lesbian service in the military. It's kind of a Bible of our history. I use it regularly, and it's fully indexed, so it's a really useful book. Even if Randy Schultz was an asshole, the book is very well written.
Why did you say that?
Well, I met the man. You know, he was a real jerk, but that was a really good book.
Well, I never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I did read his work, and I think it's had a lot of books on the AIDS epidemic, and also the history of service of gays in the military has been extremely helpful and beneficial. And I know I have read both.
Peter, I can't hear this other fellow, so you better fill in there.
Okay, Jim. In fact, I think Bob is having some problems with the equalization between volume on Susan and Jim's phone line. We'll probably have to lose one of those calls. I'm sorry to say, because we can't.
Yeah.
Right.
Could I share one thing before I leave?
Yes, please, Susan.
From my point of view, which is an elderly, fat, straight woman, I have to agree with Jim. I look at it from a historical point of view. Truman had something of the same decision to make, and he made it. He made the right one, and it cost him big time. Clinton didn't have that kind of guts.
Interesting point.
Maybe so.
And I liked Clinton.
Well, me too. But it's a really different era, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But there is right, and then there is wrong, and Clinton was wrong.
Well, you got to read the whole history. I mean, I'm not here to defend Clinton, but you got to read the whole history. It's really, really involved, and it's you know, there was real nasty politics going on there, and there were a lot of underestimations. People, really, including Clinton, really didn't realize what was the opposition that was very well organized against this, and the gay movement and those who were in favor really weren't very well organized. They didn't expect, you know, what happened to happen. So you got to kind of really read what happened first, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a simpler era, in a sense, when Truman did this, and it was post-war, and you know, the world was putting itself, the country was putting itself back together, and, you know, it was a whole different thing going on then. So, and remarkably, his wife, you know, who would be president, has said she would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I've said in speeches that it will be repealed by the next president. So,
I really hope it is.
I haven't heard from Al Gore on this. It'd be interesting to see what he has to say, the man who was supposed to be president. Anyway.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that, Peter, as to what you think if he ran.
I would be all for it. Quite frankly, if he were, in fact, Bob brought this up on his program, which runs just prior to mine. If he were to run and if he were to win, may be more than the right wing could take, the way Bob put it. And I had to think about that and agree with him that it would upset them so badly to have all of this thrown in their face, the truth about global warming and what's going on with the war. Gore would not shy away, as would Hillary, about just coming right out and calling a duck a duck. And there's, as Bob put it, probably a good chance that one of the fundies would kill him.
Ah, interesting. Oh, dear.
Yeah. It's, you know, because Gore's been telling the truth now for quite a while, and it would be incongruent for him to just stop doing that when he became president. Whereas, you know, Hillary is so political, but Gore is angrier, and I think that's what because of the whole thing that happened in the elections and the Florida and the judges, you know, the whole story. So Gore has basically been angry for what, 6-8 years. So he's probably ready to say some things that are going to rock some worlds. I wish to God he would run.
He's kind of prominent enough to just speak the truth and get away with it. That's the thing. And I'd love to see him as president, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I would too, quite frankly. And of course, the situation is that no doubt Hillary, it seems inevitable that it would be her ticket. And of course, I would dutifully go out and vote for her. The alternative is too horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, wouldn't it be justice if he were to run and win? And another person, one of our callers, I was asking, but we were talking about this the other night, said that he felt this whole Bush and Clinton thing, this dynasty has gone on too long. We've had two Bushes, and now we had two Clinton terms. Now we're looking for another Clinton term. What the F is going on in this country? It's like some sort of dueling monarchy.
Well, all I could say is, you know, the when I heard the other day that there was, you know, some real possibility that Gore might be jump in there, you know, the thought that occurred to me is just this scream that Hillary would let out, like, ah!
Yeah. Yeah. God, that woman's cold and calculating. I mean, they love her, and it, but there's sort of some sort of wink and a nod that she can't say she's from for gay marriage. I'm over it, Denny. I think it's time people just start telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Not aware of too much there, but I try. The one thing I wanted to point out, Diddy, is Bob pointed out in production chat, we're talking about the church that refused to marry the soldier. Right. Are you aware of this scandal that happened down in Montgomery? The minister was found wearing two swimsuits and a dildo. He had a dildo in him. And
yes, I heard about that.
Yeah, right. And this is Montgomery, Alabama. And Bob pointed out in production chat that even though all of those things happened, the church in Montgomery, Alabama had a very nice funeral for the reverend.
Mm-hmm.
So
I see.
So
I there
you
go. Removed the dildo first.
I would assume. And the, the other part of
curiosity. You know, I mean, it's just amazing, really. I mean, how many of these arch right-wing people turn out to be, you know, way more sleazy than they call us, you know? It's unbelievable. I mean, that sounds like a Jim Belushi death, you know?
Well, truly, it does. And the thing about it is, Denny, is that you can count on it. You could count on it. It's almost like clockwork. They seem to be falling like flies. The restroom, the wide stance toe tapper, the fellow in New Orleans.
Oh, no. There's a new phrase now. It's not wide stance, Larry. We've gotten to the bottom of that. He's got restless leg syndrome.
Oh, Jesus. That is hysterical. I am so glad you said that. I'm so going to use it.
Somebody tossed that at me the other day. I didn't invent that one either. But that's the perfect excuse, you know.
Well, being in the rural South, one wonders what color the dildo was, too.
Oh, dear. I'm not going to touch that. I'm not going to touch that.
Another level of scandal to the whole thing. and then you've got Haggard, and the list goes on and on and on. The fellow who the Page scandal, the guy, what is his name, Foley. Mm-hmm. Your memory runs out to trying to recall them all. And the thing about it is, Denny, is next month there'll be another one. Mm. You can practically count on it. How can these people live? You know, I almost, to the point, if I were king of the world, I would demand a written apology from every Republican who voted for Bush, every one of them, before they were allowed to vote again.
Well, actually, I thought of starting one of those, you know, internet group lists for all these Republican in-the-closet people who've been outed so they can kind of get together with each other, you know, and hook up.
Yeah, well, you know, the right wing fundamentalists with the ex gay movement, which is of course a huge money raising sham, and these people. Maybe they need to start like an ex pervert for their ministry, an ex perv. You know, Christian, help thyself. You know, it's just more than I can take.
I'm telling you, it's just, you know, I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop.
Me too.
Unbelievable.
Denny,
somebody said, and this is really scandalous, but apparently it's been in the news, but it was squished pretty quickly, something about Condoleezza Rice sharing a home out in California with some other woman, so on.
Yes. Yes,
that was brought up, and then it was gone, you know.
Yes, it went away very quickly. Mm-hmm. And apparently the person found that by doing a title search. And what is interesting is that the woman that she lives with spells her name, the masculine spelling of Randy, so that he spells the name R-A-N-D-Y's rather than R-A-N-D-I, which is, of course, her right. But it's spelled in such a way that you would assume if you were just looking at property records, it was a man. And, it, you know, it... Mm-hmm. apparently the property was financed with a gay man.
Helped
them. Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, you know.
Poops.
That'll be a hell of a tell-all 20 years from now when she writes her book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Denny, thank you so much for a wonderful call. You stayed with us. I've kept you on an hour and a half.
Oh, I'm sorry I took up so much of your time there.
No, don't apologize. It's been delightful. I'm just letting you know, I almost feel like I've abused you by keeping you on, but you're just such an interesting person. The stories that you tell and your perspective, you never know what you're going to come up with next.
Oh, I've got stories. I mean, you know. I've got one more story, but...
Go for it. No, there's no rush. I just wanted to give you an exit in case you were growing weary of me.
Oh, no, I kind of... I don't know what it was. I just kind of, you know, I was ready tonight. The Wiccan woman and so on. I'm trying to figure out how to tell this story because part of it's in Yiddish. the punchline is in Yiddish, so I'm trying to figure out how to tell this so that it works. But anyway, this is a true story. Last year in December, we held the first AIDS remembrance event in this little county where I live, kind of outside of New York. Because in the city, of course, there's kind of big, big AIDS remembrance things, and they're all very proper. And, of course, interfaith. And then we decided to have this thing out here in Queens. And so I was on the committee to put this thing together. And, of course, the idea was to, you know, have interfaith and be very inclusive. That's the big word in humongous quotation marks, inclusive. And so Reverend Pat Baumgartner of MCC spoke. There was a rabbinical intern from the gay congregation, Jewish congregation, and so on and so forth. There were all kinds of people. And everybody did a little thing, a little ritual. It was very participatory. And Reverend Baumgartner is a hell of a speaker. I mean, you got to hear her. Anyway, you got to get her on the air. She's just wonderful. And she did her thing, and everybody did their thing. And then as part of inclusiveness, you know, very matter-of-factly, a pagan fellow was introduced. And he got up there and he explained, you know, that in keeping with what we were doing, he was going to do this little ritual of healing. And so he held up a little plastic cup of water and said some kind of incantation over it. Well, first he read from the pagan Book of the Dead, some very, very appropriate passage, and then held this cup of water and did an incantation over it in kind of a pagan incantation and explained that now that he's done this, he put it on the table, he says, everybody can come up and dip their finger in it, in the water, and say the name of somebody whom they love who died of AIDS. And, you know, there'd be kind of a little bit of healing. It was a water ritual.
Interesting.
Well, you know, this is New York, Mark. There were many kind of Christians in the room, and about half the people were Jewish, and nobody moved because he'd said this pagan incantation over the water. And so it was a little embarrassing because nobody was... And so Reverend Baumgartner got up because she's the great healer. And she set the example, and she got up and dipped her finger in the water, crossed herself, and then said the name of a person who died. And because she did that, then everybody else kind of went after her. Rather, all the Christians got up and did what she did. Dipped their finger and then crossed the water themselves, said a name. And so then this rabbinical intern looked at me, you know, knowing that I was Jewish. He says, are you going to do it? I said, are you kidding? That water is twice treif. Treif means it's not kosher. It's been twice, you know, contaminated by, you know, religious mumbo-jumbo. You know, I mean, first there was a pagan incantation, and then it was Christianized. You know, are you kidding? I'm not going to touch that water.
No way. Oh, that's delightful.
But if
story.
You know Yiddish, it's even, you know, it's even funnier. It's twice treif.
You know? Oh, that's that. You know, there's so much humor on both sides. If we... And if everybody could just, you know, and it's an interesting thing about the gay community that we can step over some of these lines, and truly we're so used to stepping over the borders that people set for us that it's nothing for us to have a conversation like this.
The pagan guy is a good friend of mine, and when I told it to him, he's the one who laughed the hardest. Anyway, there we are. Yes, we crossed borders, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Denny, again, thank you for being with us this evening. You're a wonderful caller. Denny, are you going to be able to join us again in the future? You know, I would like to be able to call on you, you know, when some of these military stories break.
Give me a buzz, and hopefully a couple of days ahead of time. But, yeah, sure, absolutely. That's what I'd
like.
Today was just kind of a wild hair. I just felt like it, you know. But.
Yeah, you have such a wonderful perspective on all of this. It's something to treasure. The show you're on previously, and even tonight, it just were amazing. That was the night that you told us you were standing. There was a big tall Air Force guy, and he bent over and kissed you. What were you doing? Where was that story based?
Oh well, that's case number one. That's the most famous person of all, Leonard Matlevich himself.
Oh, that was Leonard. Lost the name of the person. That was Leonard. That's right, because you went up and told him that, you know, he was kind of a hero to you. Is that the way that went?
I'll tell it again if you want.
Please do.
That's my most famous story. This was, oh, God, summer of 1979. Oh, dear, I was so young. Anyway, and this was in the Castro Street Fair in San Francisco, and everything was, you know, handmade in those days. And there was a little booth there that said Leonard Matlevich for supervisor. He'd come to San Francisco as a carpetbagger. He was already famous for what he'd done. There'd been a TV movie about him. He was on the cover of Time magazine for coming out. For those people who don't know, he was a Vietnam hero with Purple Heart and Bronze Star, served 18 years Air Force Staff Sergeant, and wrote a letter to the Secretary of the Air Force saying, I'm gay, and was promptly thrown out. And that was expected. This was actually arranged with him and Frank Kameny, who were doing a test case. This was the first test case of a gay coming out in the military. And they sued, and it took 10 years, and he won. But by that time, he knew he had AIDS. The Air Force was very tired of him, and they gave him a lot of money to go away. But anyway, so it was 1979, there he was, in his little booth with a hand-lettered sign saying, Leonard Matlevich for supervisor, and I went, oh my God. And I went up to him, and I said, I'm a very short guy, he's a very tall, handsome Air Force sergeant, looked every bit the part, and I said, are you Leonard Matlevich? And he said, yes. I said, well, you're my hero. He said, why? I said, because I served in silence, and he bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
It's a precious story. It's a precious story. There's so many stories that you know, if they were just told and I guess you could call them the regular people knew who we really were. You know, it's also transparent. This is just BS what we're having to go through.
Oh, yeah.
No different than anywhere.
Well, there'll be a big ceremony at his gravesite in the Congressional Cemetery in Washington, D.C. So, as there is every year.
And see, will you be attending?
No, I'll be doing the stuff here in New York on Veterans Day. We've got a humongous contingent, a gay and lesbian contingent, in the Straight Veterans Day Parade. So I can't be in more than one place at a time, and I'm disabled. I can't go running around anyway. But there's quite a ceremony that goes on at his gravesite.
Well, if after the Veterans Day in New York, if you feel up to it, we'd love to have you call in and give us a play-by-play description. I'm sure it'll be terribly interesting.
Oh dear, I'll be so exhausted. Actually, it'll be the next day because it's on Sunday this year. Veterans Day, so you're not on the air on Sunday anyhow.
but
no, we shut her down on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. But see, what happened was that this was run by straight Veterans Council, United War Veterans Council, and they're largely Irish people and they don't want a rainbow flag in their parade. I mean, it's going to spoil their happy hetero fun,
Well, yeah. We just do that, don't we?
It's embarrassing for God. What are those queers doing there? Jesus. So when we started in 2003, this is New York, see, and it's against the law to discriminate New York against GLBT people, and it's a public parade. They could get away with it. But anyway, they said, yes, you're most welcome. And did everything they could every year to kind of screw us up, giving us the wrong lineup location and changing at the last minute. It's sort of like sending blacks to the wrong voting place in Florida. And things like that. And putting really evil anti-war protesters in front of us so that we wouldn't be noticed and all kinds of stuff. And so about 2 years ago, we were all lined up and ready to enter the stream of march when this great big Irish guy, who was one of the guys in charge, came up to us screaming at the top of his lungs because he saw our little rainbow flag. Said, "You're out of order. You just made up stuff," and he pulled us aside. And we had three gay World War II veterans with us. Combat veterans, and he was insulting us, them, they were wearing their medals, guys in their 90s, for God's sake. And then some other guy, tried to motion us to enter the stream of march, and this guy came screaming at us again, yelling at the top of his lungs, and, just being very offensive and threatened to pull us out of the parade altogether. This provoked me. Well, actually, we got to march because I intentionally had a city council member with me.
That helped.
Who was a reservist officer, and I said,
"Way to go!"
I said, "Al, it's time to let them know who you are." But in any case, I was provoked. See, so last year we had the entire New York City Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Marching Corps band with us, which is a block-long contingent complete with band, dancers, rainbow color guard, and acrobats in tights. Every last one of them wearing a rainbow sash. So they didn't like one little rainbow flag, fine. And, of course, we were the grandest contingent in the whole damn parade because everybody else was wearing fatigues. And here's this, very colorful... we're playing Americana. I mean, these are professionals, it's just gorgeous. And so we blew the shit out of them. And they're going to march with us again this year. So, see, our group is called American Veterans for Equal Rights. It doesn't even say gay.
Okay. I see.
But last year, we had this double contingent. And I'll tell you, I came in my pants when the guy running it was forced to announce at Times Square, at the reviewing stand, in a loudspeaker that could be heard for 20 blocks, the Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps Marching Band in America. He had to say that, see? it really felt good. And he's going to do it again this year, I think, so.
Wonderful. And you were stunning. That's
well, see, I was provoked, because we usually have a very small group of about 15, 20 guys, And one, an American flag and a rainbow flag and a POW MIA flag. So they didn't like that, so now they got a whole block of it. So, a New York block, mind you.
Well, that's such a wonderful story because it makes me think, if they piss you off, just make it, turn it into a full Broadway musical,
that's basically the idea, yeah.
Oh, it's a great idea. Is there video?
This is what they, this is how I have that other name, Who is that little mother,
I bet.
Don't piss them off,
You're right. He'll go all medieval on you. Is there video of that?
There are some discs that various people made. Yeah.
I was wondering if there was any posted. It would be fun to link to it if there was any up on YouTube.
It's not online. No, I haven't gotten that advanced to be able to post videos. I'm kind of in the Stone Age, you know.
Some of our people can. Maybe I can get with you via email over the weekend, and we can work out something that we can get that posted, and you could link to it, too. We could put it on YouTube, because that's a fabulous... I would just love to see that.
Well, I'll talk to my one guy who kind of made a disc and see if he can make a shorter version, get that to you.
Yeah, we can put it up on YouTube. YouTube, I've seen videos that run 10, 15 minutes. I guess, I don't know, is there a limit for YouTube video?
I have no clue. I'm 61 years old. It's a wonder I can have my website going, which I run myself. There's limits, you know. I mean, I was in on the beginning of the Internet in 1970. I was one of the original testers in the military. But, things have gotten past me now. I don't know how to post things on YouTube, so...
Things go way too fast, and I have the same problem being 53, computers are my field, but I've got to tell you, it's to the point now that nobody can wrap their head around the whole thing anymore. All these specialists, it's like doctors. There's the lung guy and the eye guy and all the... It's mm-hmm. Nobody can handle it. It's total overload. Who can deal with it? It's too big.
Way back in 1970, when I was in the Navy and working in a secure hangar, they brought in this little box. And it was sort of like an old Commodore, but anyway. And they spent a week wiring this thing up in a secure room and brought me in there and said, "You're the only one who's going to touch this." And they opened it up, they folded down the front, and there was a keyboard. Underneath the keyboard was this real science fiction thing. It was a screen.
Ah.
1970, imagine. It was a DOS screen, but to me it was like, this is, whoa, what's this,
Exactly. DOS was a big deal of the day. I mean, it was huge.
And they said, "Now you're going to be chatting live with your colleagues on other bases across the country. And we want you guys to just bullshit, because we're going to be watching just to see how this works." So that was the beginning of the Internet.
That's an amazing story. This and where was the other fellow? The other fellow was located.
This was hooked up to dozens of around the country.
I see, and so you could all see each other like a standard kind of a chat room thing. But
yeah,
back in the day.
Well, actually, of course, it didn't. What it was most like was the old ICQ, if you remember that.
ICQ. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. The early chat,
where you could see both people typing at the same time and stuff. And they just wanted to see how this worked. That's all. They had no idea what it was going to be useful for or anything else. And 8 months later, they came and took it away, and they said, "You never saw this." And I forgot all about it until 1998, when I got my first computer and was on ICQ. And I said, "Why does this sound so familiar? It looks so familiar." And I remembered, I'd been there at the beginning. So.
Yeah, you remember back in the DOS chat days, when you would type a line and when you hit enter, the text would jump up. Everything was like a frame. It would jump to the next and jump to the next. There was no smooth scroll. We've taken so many things for granted now that text smoothly flows up the screen. The changes are huge.
Oh yeah. So anyway, this little queer was at the beginning of that too. So.
What a life!
It wasn't Al Gore. It was me.
Hell yes, and nobody better challenge you on it too. By the way, I found out in the chat room that the limit for a video on YouTube is 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to speak to him, if he could edit it down to 10 minutes, or we could probably do that, because I would love to be able to link to, and it would be fun
to do. We could do. He's a little younger than me. He's 50 years old. He might be able to mess around with it.
Oh, yeah.
And, I'll mail you the disc once if we ever get to that. And so, okay, that'd be great.
great.
Yeah, we've never been able to get on the air with that. The year before, I think it was, we had In the Life follow us for 3 hours during that whole thing, but they never aired yet. So.
In the Life, now, is that part of PBS? Isn't that a PBS series?
Well, it's shown on PBS, but it's kind of an independent, you know, gay television show, which happens to be shown on PBS, but I think they're independent.
Well, they really need to release that. What is their problem?
Well, no,
what
they have so many things to show. I wouldn't criticize them ever. You know,
okay, okay, I could get in big trouble.
They have
doing
a lot
that.
Of tape, you know. So.
Okay.
So no, I mean, what was fun was they tried to pull something on us that year too, and put this evil group in front of us, and I had this cameraman from In the Life, so I grabbed him. And I said, come with me. And I started yelling at the parade marshals, we're being discriminated against. I said, point the camera at them. It was turned off, but they got so scared that they fixed the problem.
I see. Yeah, there's
I'm an evil little bitch.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with a gay guy that's got a camera. Because, you know, as far as they're concerned, we're huge, the most powerful, well-funded lobby in the whole world. You know what they say about us. Mm. You know, we're such a threat. So, you know, any one of us carrying a camera, that it must strike fear in their hearts.
Well, nowadays, you know, they don't know if this is live or what, you know, so, you know, there's, you know, way back in the 60s, the Republicans made up this thing about the, see if I can get this right, the communist black homosexual Jewish conspiracy to take over the world.
Oh, is that what it was? You guys were doing...
This is the first boogeyman. The communist, homosexual, black, Jewish conspiracy to take over the world.
I see.
Yeah, and that was the first boogeyman. And somewhere in the mid to late 60s, there was this convention, a weekend convention held in Philadelphia, and it was a gag. Okay? And it was like Jewish Defense League... Young Socialist Alliance, Gay Liberation Front, Black Panthers, all these people hated each other's guts. Okay? They were so annoyed. I think Abby Hoffman or somebody put this together. You know, one of these people with a humongously evil sense of humor.
Yeah.
And just to scare the piss out of the Republicans, they put together this convention so they could go and see, oh, it's true! It's true! Oh, my God! You know, and the whole thing was a big joke. See? And they barely resisted killing each other because they all hated each other's guts. But they did this thing as a gag.
It's a great story.
And he only read about it in The Realist, but, you know, it really happened.
I have to say that it's getting very close to the top of the hour. And,
oh, I'm
and
sorry.
We're gonna, no, don't be sorry. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I just have to let you know now, because what will happen is the stream switch is automated. So what would happen to us if I don't wrap now is suddenly we just go dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have.
I certainly enjoyed your call, Denny. It's a surprise to hear from you, and I'm very glad to hear from you. And please stay in touch.
Okay, and burn the tape, for God's sake.
Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do. Doctor a little bit, maybe.
Okay. Good night.
Good night to you, sir. And that was Denny Meyer, and an excellent guest and an excellent caller, and what a perspective regarding history, military history, and LGBT involvement in it. He told us some amazing stories when he was a guest prior to this evening, and that's on the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site. It's on one of our calendars. All the calendar links are easy to find. You'll see them, and one of the calendar dates will be for Denny Meyer, and the audio will be there. It's an incredibly interesting man. And so that's putting us very close to the end of the show this evening. I have certainly enjoyed being with you this evening, and look forward to seeing you Monday. Remember, next week we have an important guest. The guest will be the representative from the LGBT Aging Project in Massachusetts. That's a series that we're going to pursue for a while. And we're also going to have Julia Serrano, who is a written and spoken word performer, trans activist. We'll be talking about the latest outrage coming from Michael Bailey and, you know, the various BS he puts out about the trans community. And we'll also have Daniel Russ. And, yes, I don't have his name in front of me. I believe it's Daniel Russ. I don't have it typed here today. And he will be our music guest this evening. So, in any case, thank you for joining us, and have a great weekend. And what else can I tell you? Nothing, just God bless, and see you back Monday. And so here's Cynthia Manley reminding you, too,